You can't handle the truth.
Just when I think you couldn't possibly be any dumber, you go and do something like this. And totally redeem yourself!
You're gonna need a bigger boat.
Get away from her, you bitch!
The first rule of Fight Club is, you do not talk about Fight Club.
To infinity and beyond!
Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker.
Hello and welcome to the Samuel and Manuel Movie Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Sam Reimer.
And I'm Manny Manuel.
It's Real Talk number 15. It feels good to be back in the chair after a long hiatus. I think it's been probably about 3 weeks now since
pretty close.
I've been sitting here. I've been a busy boy.
You have been.
As I can be. It's Thursday, April 4th. I was like, I had the date written down. I saw April 4th written down. I'm like, there's no way that's right. But it is. It's April already. Time has been flying by.
It has been. Welcome back, Sam.
Yes, in my most recent leave of absence, Jordan Mushhead last week stepped up to the plate for an episode that I haven't listened to. I have seen Men in Black.
Mm-hmm.
Manny gave me instruction off air. He's like, you got to listen to this fucking episode.
Yeah, it's pretty fucking good.
Okay.
It's pretty fucking good.
Yeah, he was a little coy on why exactly, so I'm not exactly sure why. But
I can't remember.
Apparently it's a must listen.
Yeah, Mushhead does us proud yet again.
Good. Did you, I imagine you recorded probably a Real Talk and a...
We did. Yeah, the Real Talk went by real quick. Mm-hmm. I think it's like under an hour.
Real quick.
Yeah. I can't even really remember much of what we discussed. But yeah, it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun having the two of them on. We had massive technical difficulties.
Oh,
we started an hour and a half later.
So Mushy was here.
Yes.
And Jordan was obviously not because
a
province away.
Yeah, but it was not working out,
And
it was very frustrating. But the girls were both very patient, and it was the first time the two of them got to speak face to face.
Yeah, it's true. Even separated by screens.
Yeah, but they had a really good time.
That's nice.
Yeah,
that's good.
They had a good time. I'm very excited to have them both back on.
Shout out to them for filling in. And then, do you remember offhand who the week before that was?
Yeah, it was Kyle.
Yeah, Kyle
Gattaca.
Doing Gattaca.
Yeah.
Which is a 97, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which I haven't seen.
I believe you would really like that movie.
Interesting.
It is a science fiction film.
Sounds interesting.
Not a sci-fi.
Yeah.
Science fiction.
A la Contact.
A la Contact. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. As I was rewatching Gattaca, I was like, oh.
Sam would have liked this one.
I think Sam would really like this one.
Life gets in the way.
It does. It does.
Not to,
but
not
life
to
be, also finds a way.
I was just gonna say it's like Jeff Goldblum.
But yeah, I'm so glad to have you back. The guests, as always, were happy to step in and fill in for you while you were away. So I thank them both, all three. Jordan Mushhead last week and Kyle the week before. I thank them vehemently.
Yeah, I think it's vehemently.
Vehemently. All right. I always doubt myself. I always fuck up. Let's move into our Real Talk with our weekly question. I posed this one to the people on our Facebook group and on Instagram. What's a little-known movie that you love and most people haven't seen? I got a plethora of answers. Some movies never heard of. One of the answers I have heard of, I haven't seen in a long time. It's a movie called It's My Party. I have seen this a long time ago. Another one, I recognize the name. I should have actually had these all up. Mall Flanders.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Not familiar.
Another one I've heard of but haven't seen, The Dangerous Lives of Altar Boys. And one my cousin wrote up there, shout out to Quentin, who I know isn't listening, but I wish he would. Birdie.
I've never heard of any of these.
Never heard of any of these? Okay.
No.
Next up is a movie I'm pretty sure you've heard of. It's called 7 Pounds.
I have heard of that. Is that Will Smith?
I think so.
Yeah,
I think so.
Yeah.
The next one is actually a 1990 film I watched recently, filmed in the Kamloops area, called Cadence.
Oh.
Yeah.
Always like a good Kamloops area film.
Charlie Sheen, Martin Sheen, Lawrence Fishburne. Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah. I like... Hold on. Let me see if I can find quickly where I had it. In 1990, I'm going to say...
Oh, yeah, you have all your 1990s listed out.
Uh-huh. I'm going to say... Let's go in the 40s, if I can find my 1990 list. Because, of course, they're never... Oh, my sweet mother of God.
I should have just put them in order. I know. Honestly, for as good as Letterboxd is, the list feature needs some sorting out.
There's 91. Wow, has it been that long since I've touched my 1990 list? There it is. Holy. 77 films I watched.
And, sorry, what's the name of the film you're trying to find?
Cadence. And, oh, I put 43. I have 43. Right before. Before? After. Before RoboCop 2, because it's ranked higher. Yes. So it's sandwiched between Dick Tracy and RoboCop 2.
So that's about how much you liked it.
43.
Yeah.
43. All right. Out of 77. I guess
I'm honestly surprised that people were putting answers that you haven't even heard of. That's not easy to do.
Yeah. The next one is a movie I love. The Adventures of Priscilla, Queen of the Desert.
Yeah. Great, seen that one.
Great film.
That was really good.
Knock Around Guys.
Nope.
Another movie I've seen has a... Bear with me. An incredible monologue scene from Vin Diesel.
What? Yes. That was not where I was expecting that sentence to go.
It's not incredible as you're like, wow, like that's incredible acting. Mm. It's just kind of really cool.
Yeah.
If I can remember, I'll pull up the clip after we record.
All right.
If I can remember.
Deal.
A movie I've never heard of, Watcher in the Woods. Okay. A movie that actually is the latest episode of arguably the most popular movie podcast on the internet right now, the Rewatchables. The movie's called Shot Caller.
Okay.
Yeah. Dear Child.
God.
Near Dark.
Turns out there's a lot of movies I haven't seen. Who knew?
Yeah. And the last one before we get to your list or your selection, Digging Up the Marrow.
Man.
Yeah. Okay. I should have pulled these up so we could have taken a look at like the plot synopsis.
Yeah, that's a lot of movies and a lot of plots to dig through. I think of all those, the only one that I remember seeing is Adventures of Priscilla, Queen of the Desert.
Cadence is okay. Adventures of Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, 100% recommend.
Yeah.
100% recommend. Other than that, It's My Party, I'd recommend that one as well, actually. All right, Sam, what is your movie that you love that most people haven't seen?
Yeah, I pulled up a few. I'm going to cheat and probably give a few answers because it kind of depends who you're talking to.
I've got four.
Yeah. So you want me to go first?
Yeah, please.
We can kind of alternate back and forth if you want.
Okay.
Yeah. The first one that came to mind, actually, when I sorted my Letterboxd by popularity and included 4 stars in there, Straight Up is a movie I've recommended to a lot of people that has very few logs. It has only 16,000 watches on Letterboxd, which is not very much for a film that came out in 2022.
Well, you do that like a jerk face, so now I gotta...
Oh, yeah, I got him for all of it.
Okay.
Yeah. Bye. I can give you my next one if you're searching through.
Sure.
You think it's gonna be a second?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, okay. The next one that I wanted to do, I actually knew this offhand because the Letterboxd subreddit often has these sorts of questions where it's like, what's your least popular 5-star or something like that. Mm-hmm. So I do know that my least popular 5-star movie is Dave, which we talked about on the podcast.
Oh, but that's still got to be pretty...
Yeah, it's 41,000 logs.
Okay.
41,000 logs, which is pretty popular. I actually also went to go search... what my least popular, or sorry, what the movie is with 5 stars where none of my friends have logged it, or none of the PFGs have logged it, I guess.
Okay.
So a movie I would recommend to all the PFGs, that I have given a 5 to that none of you have seen.
Wow. Oh, can I guess it?
Yes.
Harvey.
Yes. It's absolutely Harvey. I wanted to come up with something that I've, like, nobody's ever even heard me talk about, but honestly, scrolling through all these, I've talked about all of these. Maybe the one of these that I would recommend to people that I've talked about the least, like, there's a couple of these that are documentaries that I wouldn't really recommend. Pinball's a good one.
That hasn't been seen very much?
No. Dude, that's got... Let me see. Pinball has... Sorry, let me pull it up. 7,400 watches. Only 7,400, which is crazy because it's on Prime and it was on the front page of it for a little bit. But
right.
Yeah, so that's that.
I guess it's too late now. Okay. What else you got?
Is
that all?
I mean, that's already a few. The other one I was going to give was like I feel like nobody I know has seen Dick Johnson is Dead. I watched it with Jordan, I'm pretty sure. Mm-hmm. Oh, and Wes has it logged, but I loved that movie. But yeah, I don't know. There's a lot of goodies down here. Oh, the other one that I was gonna say was I'm fairly confident almost nobody has seen Pawn Sacrifice except for Jordan, who watched it with me because it's a chess movie.
No, I've seen it.
Have you? Oh, okay. No, you haven't logged it.
Okay.
Yeah. You wound up watching it, hey? For some reason in my head, you hadn't. That's okay.
No, you're thinking of Queen's Gambit. Queen's Gambit.
I know that you haven't seen Queen's Gambit.
Yes.
In my head, I thought you had also not seen Pawn Sacrifice.
No, I've definitely seen Pawn Sacrifice.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay, so my go-to answer off the top of my head has, I believe, 7,700 watches.
Oh, okay.
So fairly low.
That's pretty low.
It's The Vast of Night.
Is that all? Because for some reason, when I sort by popularity, it's below.
Sorry. It's 28,000.
Okay, yeah.
My apologies.
Fast Money is a great answer.
That was the one off the top of my head.
Great answer, yeah.
That's one because that's one I can always recommend, and pretty much everyone I know is like, I've never fucking heard of that.
Yeah, great movie.
Okay, so that was my go-to answer without referencing it. Mm-hmm. My other three are all 4 stars that are real low watches. So I'm going to go... Can I put these in order of... Okay, so that one would go there. Okay.
I know one of them.
Okay.
And I just saw one on your screen, but that's not the one.
Okay.
One of them, can I say it?
Yeah.
It's Coupe de Ville.
That is my yes. Do you want to harbor a guess at how many watches?
It's triple digits. It's like 900.
It's 513.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Oh no, sorry, it's 1.1K. I was looking at the
So
1.1.
So it's gone. I think last time we talked about it was at like 900.
Yeah. So that was a 4-star. Love that movie.
Yeah.
Absolutely love that movie. Indian Summer at 3,100.
Don't know what that is.
Absolutely love it.
Or maybe you have
to. Will not recommend it. Mm-hmm. This is for a specific group of people that went to camp as kids. This movie will resonate with them. Mm-hmm. Other people, like, I think if you watch it, you'd be like, 2, maybe 3. But for me, easy 4. And the last one is PCU. 10,000 people have seen it. Fucking love that movie.
Yeah, it kind of seems. I think Vast of Night's a really good answer for that. And even though I gave a few different answers, I think Vast of Night is probably one of my favorite ones for that. Simply because something like Harvey and something like Dave that have very, like, they have 41,000 watches, which isn't the least amount, but it is small. They will have had more people that watched them before Letterboxd was invented.
Yeah.
So, like, Harvey does have a cultural impact, even though it's not watched very much on Letterboxd. So, yeah, I think Vast of Night's a very good answer for
okay,
that.
Okay, so there's my lowest rated 5-star is a documentary, When We Were Kings.
Yeah.
4. I don't see any 5. Lots of 4s. 4. So, When We Were Kings, 23,000. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I... And these are just logged. Obviously, if I went... And I've been getting a lot of shit from both Kyle and Wes that I should be logging and rating every movie I've ever seen.
No, I don't like to use it for that.
Like,
no.
If I come across a movie, like, as an example, let's see. Like, I've not logged Lawrence of Arabia because I haven't watched it since I've been on Letterboxd.
Right.
But they think that I should be rating it. So I should, if I see Lawrence of Arabia, I should be 5 stars.
Mm. I don't know if I agree with that. I think I like to use Letterboxd for specific dates and ratings that I'm confident in. Like, for example,
same.
If I found a ticket stub, and I've actually looked back in my emails to see if I can find old ticket stubs, which I'm sorry, I just gave you another way to fill your days. If I found any electronic ticket stubs or real ticket stubs, I would go back and log them because I know the date and I could probably have a good idea of what I would have rated the movie back then. But if I don't have the specific date, I don't want to do it.
And I think that what it is for me is that I want to make sure that I'm giving them the rating that they deserve.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I can easily, like when we did the Warner Brothers draft, because he was hounding me, I went through the entire Warner Brothers library mm-hmm. and just counted how many I've seen. I didn't rate them. I just counted them. Just Warner Brothers alone, 387 films.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't rate them. But I could go through and I could probably give you a fairly accurate idea of what my rating would be, especially since I only do out of 5 with no half points.
Yeah.
But I'm just like, I don't want to. I want to rate them as I watch them.
Not to mention it's also a huge amount of work. Like, right now, you can look at your Letterboxd and say, these are the movies I've seen since Letterboxd became a thing, and this is what I thought of them at the time.
Mm-hmm.
If you begin logging movies before that, that opens up a massive pool of movies, and it's never going to be complete. I don't think you would ever feel secure that, like, I have logged every single movie I've ever seen. I don't think you would ever reach that.
I could, using Letterboxd, because you can sort the films by year, and I could just go, like, I could just bring up, start at 1900, and just go through each one. I could. I'm not going to.
Yeah.
I just prefer to log the movies as I watch them. Sorry, Wes. Sorry, Kyle. And Wes, like, I understand. Wes wanted me to do it because he's like, when I see a movie that I want to watch, I look it up and see if any of the PFGs or anybody I know, because I think he follows actually quite a few other people, mm-hmm. like, for lack of a better, like, celebrities, not like celebrities, but like podcasters and reviewers and stuff like that. I have a couple podcasters that I follow, but he wants to see what they think as well. And I appreciate that he wants to include me on that, but I prefer to just do it as I go.
I can't remember if I told you this or not. I meant to drop this in the movie chat, and it never wound up happening. Several weeks ago, months ago now, who knows? In my review for Walk Hard: The Dewey Cox Story, a random commenter reached out to me who had also logged the movie, and he said, "No way, I'm from Kamloops too." And I looked him up. I can't remember the guy's name off the top of my head, but he was just browsing. He was just browsing Walk Hard reviews, mm-hmm. and saw my profile and was like, "Oh shit, another dude from Kamloops." And I checked to see if we have any mutual followers, and lo and behold, he's followed by one Wes Meineker. So that was just a funny random connection.
Awesome. You just said, "Hey, listen to our podcast."
Yeah. Well, I mean, I have on my letterbox listened to the Samuel Emmanuel movie podcast. Nice. So if he saw I was from Kamloops, he fucking saw.
I fucking hope he's listening.
He better be. Shout out to that guy, whoever you are, whose name I can't remember. Apologies.
Yeah, great. A great list. I like these little known ones. I wish I kind of had thought ahead and pulled up all the mm-hmm. plot synopsis for these little known movies. Thank you, everyone, for answering. As always, this one actually I didn't put on Spotify. I put on our social media. But as always, if you answer our Spotify questions, which I'm, you know what, I'll give you the chance. I already fucking know your answer. But last week's question, last Monday, not the Monday we just had, but the previous Monday, was Tarantino's birthday.
Mm-hmm.
So the question I posed is, who's your favorite character from a Quentin Tarantino film?
Oh, it's Colonel Hans Landa.
Yeah.
That's easy. Yes. That's super easy. I was ready to cut you off mid-question with Inglourious Bastards, but that wasn't the question that you asked.
So another section here on Real Talk that I was going to say we'd like to do, but I guess it's sad to say that, is our In Memoriam.
Mm.
Every once in a while, someone passes away that has contributed to the art form that we love. And when it happens, we like to pay tribute to them. We had a couple people pass away. This one I wanted to throw on here, while I haven't seen any of this guy's movies, he was in a show recently that I really enjoyed, and I'm sad to say he passed away, and I'm unsure what they're going to do going forward. His name is Chance Perdomo. He was, I think his character's name was Eric on Gen V, which is a spinoff of The Boys. Andre Anderson is his character's name. He was really good on this show. Did you watch The Boys?
No, I've actually never. Oh, sorry. I've watched the first two seasons of The Boys. I never got around to season three, unfortunately.
Okay.
And then I never checked out Gen V.
It's really good. Yeah, it fits perfectly within that world, and I had a really great time with it. His character, like almost every character in The Boys, is intricate and deep and not the kind of person you're used to kind of rooting for. But I had a really good time, and I just wanted to pay tribute to him because I felt he did so good. I'm really sad that he passed away, and I'm very curious as to how they're going to be able to do the show going forward. So thank you, Chance, for a one season of television that you gave me. The other person that passed away is an actor named Louis Gossett Jr. He won an Oscar for An Officer and a Gentleman. He's been in a lot of films, but the only two I wanted to mention were the two movies that meant a lot to me. I have seen An Officer and a Gentleman, but I've only seen it once, and it was way back then in the 80s. So I don't remember it, so I don't feel strong enough to speak on it. But the two roles he had that really mean a lot to me were a film he... Oh, I wish I grabbed the year. Let me see if I can grab it quickly. It would have been around 90... the movie's called Toy Soldiers. If you remember, I talked about it. It's like Die Hard in a prep school.
Right, yeah, I do remember that.
Where is it here? Ah, 91. 91. He plays the Dean, Parker. And he's perfectly cast for it. He's authoritative, but he's very caring for these kids. And he is well-suited for this role. And conveys enough believability that he sees something special in these kids and at the same time understands that he's not a pushover. Toy Soldiers, absolutely love that movie. I know it made my top 10 of that year because of how much I enjoy that fucking film. And then the other movie of his that I wanted to speak on was from one a little bit earlier in the 80s. Where did it go? God damn it. That's what I get for not being as prepared as I should be. 1985's sci-fi film Enemy Mine. He plays Drac. And... it's during a long space war, the lives of two wounded enemies become dependent on their ability to forgive and to trust. It's Dennis Quaid and Louis Gossett Jr. The makeup on Louis Gossett Jr. in this, as he plays kind of almost a reptilian character, is impressive. And it's about these two enemies who they kind of shoot each other down. They land on this planet, and they have to work together to survive on this kind of hostile planet. It's really good. As you can see, the trailer's playing, so The special effects don't quite hold up. The makeup, not the greatest, but the movie really worked for me. I'm really excited to revisit this movie. I've seen it on Amazon a few times, and I remember loving this as a kid. I remember frightening me as a child. There's a kind of like an underground monster that crops up a couple times. That's pretty freaky. The movie, I don't want to give anything away if anybody plans on actually checking this out, but the movie goes to a place that you don't really anticipate. And I remember this is one of the kind of like an early, a film that's kind of teaching you about, basically about racism. Mm-hmm. Like don't judge somebody just because of what they look like. And I remember it kind of resonating with me in that, you know, the human character obviously hates this person because they're at war with each other. But when you get to know them as an individual, you realize that they're not bad. And it resonated with me. And I'm kind of really excited to, I've been really wanting to revisit this movie for a long time. So I think I'm going to try and get it in the next short while here.
In honor of the man.
Yeah.
I have unfortunately no experience with Louis Gossett either.
Mm-hmm.
I've just been reading his Wikipedia page a little bit to see anything interesting about him. He was offered a chance to play for the New York Knicks basketball team, which I think is pretty interesting, but turned it down to accept a role in A Raisin in the Sun.
Oh.
So I guess he had a pretty promising amateur basketball career.
Good for him.
And declined an athletic scholarship to NYU. To pursue acting, so
I think it worked out for him.
Yeah, I would say the fact that we're that was back in 1954, and you and I are sitting here talking about him now.
That was in 54.
That was in 1954. After graduating from Abraham Lincoln High School in 1954, he attended NYU, declining an athletic scholarship.
Holy guacamole!
Standing 6'1" tall, he was offered the opportunity to play for the Knicks and turned down the offer.
Man, he was 88.
Yeah.
realize he was that old.
Long, prosperous life, man.
Look at this. Like,
yeah, man, he's pointing out a picture of him, like a recent picture of him. Dude is... Dude just looks like a dude.
I'm going to have to say that. You hear it all. Black don't crack.
Yeah, that's right.
He looks fantastic.
Yeah.
I will not be looking that good in my 80s.
No.
Wow. I didn't realize he was that old. Unreal. He was in another movie. Again, I've only seen it a couple times when I was young. Massive Top Gun ripoff called Iron Eagle. I think he was in the first and the second one. Either way, someone I've always kind of respected, even though never really a superstar. I really, really want to rewatch An Officer and a Gentleman. It's another high on my would like to rewatch at some point. Hmm. Oh, yeah. So thank you to Chance Perdomo and Louis Gossett Jr. for your contributions to cinema. We greatly appreciate it. And we look forward to... seeing some of your films. Chance, I don't know. I guess I'll have to take a look at your filmography. I don't see any movies I've even never heard of. But I do appreciate your time on Gen V. But Louis Gossett Jr., I want to check out some of your previous films. So thank you for your contributions to this beautiful art form. Let's get into what we've been watching. Sam, we haven't seen each other in a while.
Yeah.
What have you been watching?
Yeah, so why don't we start strong here?
Cool.
I just want to start with, I had a day off where I just needed something that I knew I was going to like.
Okay.
I needed something that would fit the bill. And I had been talking a lot with my brother about a movie I'd been pitching to him
for years. Oh, shit, son.
And I don't think he actually wound up watching it himself, but I went home because I was craving a watch of David Fincher's 1997 film, The Game.
Fuck. Yes.
A movie which, if you haven't gathered, is a favorite of Manny's. I don't think this would approach your top 20, but this is like, I would say,
no.
Like a good, solid, I mean, the fuck yeah says it all. This is this is one that you've always preached the merits of to me. As a matter of fact, I'm pretty sure that the famous 40, the famous list of 40 movies that you pitched me when we first became friends, this was firmly on there.
Yeah?
I think so.
Fuck yeah.
I would not be surprised to learn that was the case. Anyway, so we had The Game. Sorry, I'm going to pull up the IMDb plot synopsis here. After a wealthy San Francisco banker is given an opportunity to participate in a mysterious game, his life is turned upside down as he begins to question if it might really be a concealed conspiracy to destroy him. I like how non-spoilery that review or that synopsis is. And I'm going to do my best to keep mine as non-spoilery as possible as well. Sorry, I'm just trying to reorganize my desktop there. There we go. So yeah, unfortunately, I can't talk too much about The Game because there's so much of it that's going to be spoilery. It's like the whole premise of the movie is like trying to figure out what the fuck is going on, basically. So yeah. It's very difficult to talk about. It's very anxiety-inducing. It's basically watching somebody get fucked with. Where he doesn't know what's going on for 2 hours long, and it's a great ride. One of the things I was so impressed with is since I think this is only my second, maybe third watch of The Game ever. So I was kind of curious how much I would like it on rewatch now knowing what the ending is.
Yes,
and I honestly like it better.
Yeah,
I'm able to it's not even that. I can see, like, oh, this happened really because of this. It's not really that it, like, there was a twist or anything that made me reconceptualize certain moments. It was more like I was able to step back and go, like, wow, this movie's so insanely well-paced. Wow, they really withhold a lot of information from you for a really long time and somehow still manage to hold your interest. They do such a good job of releasing these little nuggets along the way just to hold your interest. And they make you question everything.
Yes.
Every single little thing that happens, you're like, oh, I wonder what that's about. I wonder if, oh, is this person in on it? Is there even an it to be in on? It's a huge mindfuck movie, and it's a lot of fun. It totally delivered. You know, in retrospect, having seen it a few times now, something about the ending still isn't quite sitting with me right. There's some suspension of disbelief required there. Let's put it that way.
With the climax.
With, yeah, the... I'm talking on the rooftop there.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, simply because, you know, this movie ostensibly takes place in the real world.
Yes.
And they're, let's just say, I can't even really say anything about it other than it would take so much time and effort and planning to have this happen to somebody.
Yes.
It would, an ungodly amount of money and planning and omniscience to get this right.
The funny thing is, as everything is occurring and you're unsure of what's happening, everything is believable.
Mm-hmm.
Until the climax, and then you're like, that can't happen.
Yeah, like, no.
Yes, like, I agree. I understand. Yeah. Like, once you find out what the game is, you're like, that's impossible.
Yeah, but it's fine. Like, I still enjoy the movie.
Yes.
But I agree. Like, now having seen it a few times now, I'm like, this is ridiculous.
Yes.
Like, this is a ridiculous concept.
A literal impossibility to pull this off.
But it's fun. Like,
yeah.
The whole fun of the movie is trying to, like, figure out what's happening.
Yes.
And it's great. It's super well-paced. It's very entertaining. Great performance by Michael Douglas. I will say, I've noticed, like, no flaws in this movie. Like, the ending, let's say, can be an acquired taste, but as far as, like, actual filmmaking flaws, I can't find any. With the exception of literally one shot that I find hilarious. It's a blink and you miss it moment. It's when he's being attacked by the dog. Do you remember that? When he's, like, jumping up on the balcony?
Yes.
There's a hilarious insert
shot.
When
it gives him an extra pull?
Yeah. And
yes.
It's just, like, the above-the-waist reaction of, like, he's way overacting this attack. I mean, I'll try to describe it for people listening. This isn't a spoiler, I think.
It's not a spoiler at all.
So, for context, Michael Douglas's character is hanging from a ledge. He's trying to hoist himself up a little bit, and he's being chased by a dog. So there's a dog beneath him as he's dangling, who's biting at his foot. So we get the shot of just Michael Douglas's face and torso trying to hoist himself up. We get an insert shot of a dog attacking what is apparently Michael Douglas's leg, but it's probably a fake leg or a stunt double.
Probably
a
stunt double.
Yeah. And then we get another shot of Michael Douglas apparently reacting to being attacked, and his reaction is just so bad. It's like a 1 second long shot, but it's comically bad.
this is a spoil. I can't spoil this part. Yeah. Let's turn our mics off.
Mics off?
Okay.
Okay.
Mics off.
Oh, mics are going off.
Because I want to mention now. So mics off in 3, 2, 1. You're on.
Yeah.
Okay. So,
are you gonna do anything for that, or are we just gonna give the people silence?
I guess I can put like Jeopardy music or something.
That'd be good.
I could find some of the score for the game.
Some elevator music.
Yeah. Some was it the girl from Ipanema?
Yeah, that's the girl from Ipanema.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, there's no way I was telling that on air.
Yeah, that's a great little tidbit.
Yeah. So when you watch it next time, you can look for that.
Yes, I will.
Okay.
That's good to know.
Awesome. What did you give the game?
I gave it a 4.
Yeah.
It's probably like it's a high 4. It's a very strong 4. Mm-hmm. I knew going in that it would be. There's some aspects of the suspension of disbelief where I'm just like, ooh, I don't know. Like the ending doesn't ruin the movie for me by any stretch. I think it's a pretty solid ending. All things considered,
I fucking love the ending.
Yeah. But there is a couple moments where you're like, this is pushing the suspension of disbelief for sure.
It's actually not the ending that pushes it for me. Let me say this again without spoiling. It's when he wakes up.
Yeah. When he wakes up.
So remember he...
are we talking about...
He is somewhere else.
Oh,
when he wakes up.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, like that's... That's dangerous.
Yes.
Yeah. That end for me this time, it was the taxi cab for me. Like they
that's
do,
fair.
They do explain that at the end in like a blink and you miss it sentence. But even then, I'm like, I don't know if that explanation's good enough, man.
Yeah.
That's pretty dangerous.
Big time. Okay.
Anyway,
I think we might be hinting too much.
Might be hinting at too many spoilers. But
I'm so glad. Like I love that movie.
Yeah. The game's a ton of fun.
Okay.
It's a ton of fun.
Awesome.
Next up is a movie that I actually it's a potential answer to the question that we said earlier, which is a little known movie that people should see that many people haven't. I don't think this got a lot of love. I am pulling up the Letterboxd right now, and it is a 2022 release with only 82,000 watches, which is more than the ones we were talking about, but for a recent film, that's pretty low, I think. For a film that was released while Letterboxd was a thing, it was pretty low. That was 2022's Good Luck to You, Leo Grant.
Oh, fuck yes! Yeah.
Nancy Stokes, a retired school teacher, is yearning for some adventure and some sex. And she has a plan, which involves hiring a young sex worker named Leo Grand. This is pretty well a one-location, two-actors movie. It's about an older woman who, as they say, is a retired school teacher, and she hires a sex worker. And the chemistry between Daryl McCormick and Emma Thompson is palpable. They do such a good job of bridging over the awkward into the comedic, into the sexual. They have such a fun time playing off one another. And this is a movie I was confident. I was like, oh, I know where this is going. When I watched like the first 20 minutes and Emma Thompson is all nervous, her performance is just exceptional. I knew in my own head, I'm like, oh, I know exactly where this is going.
And was this a first watch?
No, it was number two. Okay. This is number two. Okay. But on my first watch, okay. I thought I knew for sure where this was going.
Okay.
And I loved how they subverted my expectations of where exactly this was going to go.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how much I can say about that, because again, it's going to start to get into spoilers. But suffice it to say, this movie surprised me at every turn. Same. I think that Emma Thompson is one of the most talented living actors. She is absolutely brilliant. Everything that we've seen her in, both on this podcast and off of it, she has never disappointed me.
Mm-hmm.
She's always giving 110%. And this movie, you know, there's not really many great roles for women over 40, but man, what a meaty role this is. And what a fantastic performance by Emma Thompson. I think anybody who wants to see some great acting, some great writing, and just have a fun hour and a half movie about sex that'll make you laugh, make you cry, it definitely goes to some very emotional places as well. And there's a couple of moments where, in particular, Emma Thompson's character does something that she doesn't understand how bad it is.
Mm-hmm.
And me in the audience, I'm like, that's bad. Like, I know how bad it is. And the other character who gets hurt by it knows how bad it is. And she's like, what's the big deal? I don't understand.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a really hard emotional moment in the movie. But it's all part of the journey of growth. And I think both of these characters learn so much about themselves in this hour and a half long runtime. This is my second watch. I gave it a 4 out of 5 again. This is... And except if you're looking for a great movie about sex, that is quite serious a lot of the time, but still gives you a number of good laughs. Good Luck to You, Leo Grand, is on, where did I watch this?
Amazon.
It was on Amazon. It's not showing. Okay. Yep. Yeah, IMDb is showing it streaming on Prime. So yeah, that makes sense.
This was my number 8 film.
I think I had it at 8 as well. Number 8 of 2022, which is a very strong year, by the way.
Great year.
Yeah.
I absolutely fucking love this movie. I can't heap enough praise on it. If I wasn't so busy with some of my watches, I would love to revisit this. I should kind of try to keep it at top of mind now for when I just want to put something on. I agree. I can't heap enough praise on Emma Thompson's performance. What? Now I need to know.
Well, the big one, you're trying to figure out the awards category that year?
Yeah.
The big two that I remember are Michelle Yeoh wins.
No. That's last year?
Well, that's 2022. Michelle Yeoh wins. Cate Blanchett gets snubbed.
Oh, right. I'm off by a year.
Yeah. Yeah, because this is 2022. We're in 2024 now. Yeah, Michelle Yeoh wins.
Great. Okay,
Cate Blanchett gets snubbed. Who else is
Michelle, there? Michelle. Oh, God. Because Michelle Williams went for lead in The Fabelmans.
Yeah.
Which is ridiculous because she could have won it if she went and supported. I didn't see Andrea Riseborough for To Leslie and Ana de Armas in Blonde.
I didn't see that movie, but I heard it was bad.
Do not watch it. Do not watch it.
And she's the only reason to watch it.
She is the only reason to watch it. And for you people rolling your eyes, it's not because she gets naked several times. That's not.
There's a lot of movies you could watch if you want to see Anna de Armas get naked.
She is really good in that movie. She is great. But I don't. I honestly don't know how Emma Thompson didn't get nominated for this. It's in my opinion, kind of ludicrous. Mm-hmm. But whatever. What do I know? I thought Kate Blanchett was the best.
Yeah, mumble over there. yeah, I gave a good luck to you, Leo Grand, a 4 again. And I would highly recommend this for people, especially as an answer to the previous question, kind of a little-known movie. People have probably heard us talk about it before, so if you're listening, you probably already are aware of it. But nonetheless, great movie. So that's two of them. The last movie I wanted to talk about, maybe I shouldn't have closed with this one because I don't know that I don't know that I really have a ton to say about it.
Cool. Nothing wrong with being quick.
Yeah. Another 2022. Revisiting that year, I guess.
Holy shiza.
Don't Worry, Darling. My most anticipated movie of 2022. So back at the end of 2021 or beginning of 2022, Manny and I listed our most anticipated. And coming off the strength of Olivia Wilde's debut effort as a director, Booksmart,
which I watched last night.
Yes, I saw that. A movie that Manny and I both adore. I predicted that Don't Worry, Darling would be my number one movie of 2022. Not only was that not true, but I actually didn't wind up seeing it that year. I didn't wind up seeing it till last week. So while her husband leaves home every day to work in a top secret facility, a young 1950s housewife begins to question her life when she notices strange behavior from the other wives in the neighborhood. This has a 48 Metascore, so unfortunately this didn't get great reviews. Barring for a second that I was pretty sure coming into it that I already knew, let's say, the gimmick. I was pretty sure I already knew what the gimmick behind the movie was, so it kind of lacked a little bit of the surprise element for me, unfortunately. But even putting that aside, this movie is really marred by one thing, one big thing, and that is that Harry Styles is not a great actor. Harry Styles is really wooden and really bad in this movie. Granted, there is some context required because he came in like super last minute. He was dating Olivia Wilde at the time.
No.
He wasn't?
No.
They did it after?
This is where they met.
Oh, okay.
While she was married to Jason Sudeikis.
Woohoo! I didn't know that part. That's crazy. Yeah. Okay. Well, all that notwithstanding, this had some behind-the-scenes drama with it. Apparently, Shia LaBeouf was initially cast in the male lead. Florence Pugh and him did not get along. What I heard, I don't have any sources to confirm this, but what I heard is that Florence Pugh gave an ultimatum. It's either him or me. Apparently, they did not get along at all. They wound up going a different direction with the male lead. It went with Harry Styles instead on very late notice, and he was bad. He was very bad.
Yes, he is very, very bad.
Which sucks. I don't know. I believe that the man oozes natural charisma and probably has a better performance in him than this. I don't have any films to back that up. I haven't seen him. He's in the MCU now, right?
He has a cameo.
Yeah, because I saw him in one of the mid-credit scenes, and I can't remember which movie.
He hasn't been in since.
Oh, really? Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Presumably, somebody knows something we don't. Like, presumably, somebody's like, oh, this guy actually does have acting talent. We just need to give him the right roles for it. But this ain't it, man. This is a bad performance, and a lot of this movie hinges on the trust between Florence Pugh's character and Harry Styles' character. So when you see the deteriorating relationship between them, it does not hit any of the emotional beats that it's supposed to. So that's really unfortunate for the movie. With that being said, Florence Pugh, being the pro that she is... Whoa.
Amber alert.
Amber alert. My goodness. Hold on. All right. That was bizarre. That was scary.
Yeah, that was. Langley. Okay.
Yeah, it's the first on-air Amber Alert we've ever gotten. Goodness gracious. Okay.
Oh, no. Okay, whatever.
I don't know any of these people.
Yeah, well.
Okay.
Yeah, okay.
Whew, now that I've got to get my heart rate back down.
Yeah.
I thought I said too much about Florence Pugh. Thought they were coming after me.
I thought my computer was about to die.
Yeah. No, but as I was saying, Florence Pugh is never anything other than a pro. the worst performance from her is always better than the best performance from almost anybody else. She's one of the best actresses that we, certainly one of the best young actresses we have working today.
I agree.
She is charming, insanely talented, very easy to look at.
Yes.
She is very beautiful. She might have the most number of people. She might be on the largest number of people's cheat sheets in the entire world. let's put it that way. So yeah, she is characteristically beautiful in the movie. And I love the look of the movie. I love the look of the neighborhood. Oh, the
production design is amazing.
Production design is spectacular. The costuming is great. The hair. There's a shot. There's a building kind of outside the city limits that you may or may not remember. Mm. I love the look of that set, and the shots of Florence Pugh framed up against that building is really beautiful. There's a lot of really good cinematography and visual filmmaking in this movie, and Florence Pugh is giving fucking 110%. Unfortunately, the predictability of the script and the Harry Styles performance did knock a couple points off this. I think, had a better time than not, especially just trying to figure everything out on the first watch. Even though I kind of knew where it was going, I didn't really know the specifics, let's say. How can I say this without spoilers? I knew the movie it was getting the most comparisons to going into it, but I didn't know specifically why.
Okay.
Didn't know specifically what was going on. So I kind of had some hints, but anyway. So it still got a 3 out of 5 for me.
Wow.
I suspect that if I ever rewatch this, it will get moved down because it will not have the surprise factor, even less than it had the first time.
Okay.
But I think I appreciated enough of the filmmaking prowess. Olivia Wilde, having seen this movie, I still fully believe that she's a very talented filmmaker.
Oh, I'm on board.
Yeah.
Like, one strike doesn't count against you.
And I do think that the behind-the-scenes drama of this film at least saves her a little bit. Granted, it is the job of a director to kind of manage all that as well. And apparently it did get a little bit out of hand. But nonetheless, a disappointing, if fun enough, experience for Don't Worry, Darling.
This finished at 60 on my list that year.
Yeah, where did I put this actually?
Out of 79.
Oh, I have... Let me pull up my list. So if I go for lists, and let's try to find my 2022s. I just added to it. So
since we just mentioned it, for those wondering, 79, Ana de Armas' Blonde was 77.
Yeah, Don't Worry, Darling.
And Ana de Armas in Deep Water was 78.
Oh my God, Ana de Armas. Get a better agent, dude. In 2022, I have 34 2022s logged. I have Don't Worry, Darling 29th.
Yeah.
So still in the threes. I have it sandwiched between two Pixar movies, Turning Red and Lightyear. Mm. So
Don't Worry, Darling is sandwiched between The Sea Beast and Spirited for me.
Didn't see either of those.
Yeah.
I heard Sea Beast was good, I think. Not very, apparently. Was that nominated for Best Animated? Maybe not. I don't know. Anyway, doesn't matter. That is what I've been watching.
Nice.
Manny, you've been waiting patiently. I would love to catch up on you what you've been watching.
So, for those of you, I may have mentioned it last week, but I definitely didn't. But those of... Oh, yes, sir.
Real quick. Sea Beast did lose Best Animated Feature to Guillermo del Toro's Pinocchio.
Which was 64th.
Yeah. On my list. Not a great year for Manny in animation.
Nope.
Anyway, sorry, go ahead.
For those in the movie chat group, I've been nothing short of infuriated by Kyle's selection of movies to watch. As he is infatuated with Tubi, and he was watching a bunch of movies because they're leaving Tubi soon. These selection of films included the cinematic masterpieces Leprechaun and Leprechaun 2 and Leprechaun 3 and Leprechaun 4. So I was getting irritated that he was wasting his time watching drivel. And his excuse, well, they're leaving Tubi soon. So I quickly just went onto Amazon to their leaving Amazon soon and showed him movies that were leaving Amazon soon, such as The Deer Hunter and Death Proof and other Do the Right Thing. I'm like, watch these instead. And he did. But he watched one that I happened to mention. I had never seen it. Sadly, it's by a filmmaker that I just don't like. And that film is Woody Allen's Manhattan. So I decided to watch it because he watched it. I was like, okay, if you're going to watch it, I told you to watch it. It is highly regarded, so I decided to finally check it out. Manhattan. The life of a divorced television writer dating a teenage girl.
Oh, no.
Is further complicated when he falls in love with his best friend's mistress. So, for those of you unaware of Woody Allen, I decided to look into the exact story of what happened.
Oh, man. It's not, I've looked into it before. It's not great.
Okay. So, I got into the exact details. So, it's still not great. Still not as bad as what I had heard.
Oh, okay.
But doesn't make it any better. Woody Allen was married to a woman named Mia Farrow. She had an adoptive daughter that she had with her former husband, Sunyi something.
Hmm.
Can't remember her last name. Adopted. Now, she was older.
Sunyi Previn.
Thank you. She was older when Mia Farrow and Woody Allen got together. She was away at school most of the time, from everything I've read. Sunyi and Woody Allen fall in love. They start an affair, and they get married. So he ends up marrying his adoptive stepdaughter. Now, I say adoptive because he had never adopted her.
Mm-hmm.
She was adopted by his wife in a previous relationship. Both of them claim nothing happened prior because she had been away at school. So if that's the case, fine, whatever. Their relationship became public when she was 21. And if I remember correctly, he was 56. Around there. Still not the greatest thing. All right. So that's creepy.
So that was Manhattan.
So Manhattan is about a 41-year-old writer who is dating a 17-year-old girl. It is open. All the people in the movie have no problem with him doing this. It is fine. It is very creepy to hear the things that he says about the 17-year-old girl. And may I add that the 17-year-old girl in the movie, Mariel Hemingway, is 17 years old in this movie. She is 17 years old. Mm-hmm. She is a 17-year-old actress playing a 17-year-old.
Okay.
There is a scene where Woody Allen is breaking up with her. And the shot is a close-up of Mariel Hemingway's face, who is very sad that the man that she loves is leaving her. And it is a close-up of shoulders and head. And it is just her face, and she has got a tear, and she is crying, and she's upset. And from off-camera, you just see, Sam will get this, Woody Allen's hand just caressing her neck and cheek. And knowing that he is a 40-year-old man doing that to a 17-year-old woman, even though it is a movie, it's creepy as fuck.
Uh-huh.
That being said, this is probably one of my favorite Woody Allen films.
Okay. All right.
Now, don't get me wrong. It is very creepy. But Woody Allen finally, after I think I've watched 6 or 7 of his films, his character, besides being basically a pedophile,
mm-hmm.
is not an annoying, whiny fuck that you just want to pummel into the earth to get him to shut up. Moving ahead, this movie got a 3 from me. It got a 3 because Sam, the cinematography in this movie is exquisite. There is a shot in this movie of Woody Allen and Diane Keaton sitting on a bench with the Manhattan Bridge in the background. The movie's in black and white. It is so beautiful, I would frame it and put it on my wall.
Mm-hmm.
It is breathtakingly beautiful. There is a shot I was talking about with Kyle. The lighting, the framing, the cinematography in this movie is so beautiful. His teenage girlfriend is at his apartment, and she is on a couch on the left-hand side of the screen just reading a book, and she is illuminated perfectly. And Woody Allen comes from downstairs on a spiral staircase that is illuminated perfectly, and everything else is pitch black. And you just watch them, and they come into the same room. It is a beautiful shot. There are so many beautiful shots in this movie. It's not good enough for me to say that you should watch it. But Woody Allen believes that this movie, this is kind of a romantic comedy. There are certain times in this movie where the score is so overwhelmingly epic and romantic, you have to be, you're like, what movie does he think he's making? When it's a 17-year-old woman that you are telling the world that you deserve. He does fall in love with his best friend's mistress. Like, that's how good these people are. Who's played by Diane Keaton, who he'd starred in Annie Hall with. The movie's a three. It is so beautifully shot. Like, I truly would love to get that picture of them in the Manhattan Bridge framed. Like, it's beautiful. I'm sad to say that I actually liked a Woody Allen film. There's other ones like Bullets Over Broadway.
I love that this is a huge, like, I can't believe I liked this and it got a three. Like, that's nothing.
Yeah. Well, like his other characters, you literally just want to reach in the screen and just pummel and kick the shit out of. And I hate to say that despite the fact that this 41-year-old man is falling in love and basically almost grooming a 17-year-old girl, he's not as despicable as other characters he's had.
That's saying something, too.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. It is horrible what his character's doing. Obviously, it was a little bit more socially acceptable in the late 70s. And as we went along, it became less and less acceptable, as it should. So at the time, whatever. But I found myself much more entertained with this movie. He's still got about two or three more that I've heard such good things about that I do want to check out. Hannah and Her Sisters and Crimes and Misdemeanors are the two big ones off the top of my head. But yeah, I was pleasantly surprised. But you won't like the way the movie ends. And it is truly hard to get past the fact that he is pining over and grooming and playing with this 17-year-old girl's feelings.
This is a great study in separating the artist from the art, I think. And
except he doesn't separate the artist from the art.
It's a great thing to describe how we kind of it can be case by case and it can be on a sliding scale. I compare this to it's on a continuum of creepiness.
Yeah.
And Woody Allen certainly exists on it. How close he is to somebody like a Bill Cosby is, you know, everybody can make their own decision on that. The fact that precisely the kind of things that he has been doing in real life are very similar to the things that his characters do on screen, that he wrote and that he directed and that he starred in, leads me to believe that his worldview cannot be very far off from this. That is the kindest way I can say that.
That's fair. That's a fair assumption.
So for that reason, I'm out. Like, I don't. I'm confident this is beautiful. Maybe I will watch this one day. Maybe I really will.
Don't.
I don't really intend to.
No, don't.
And I don't really intend. Honestly, if I'm gonna watch any Woody Allen at all, it will be Annie Hall.
100% watch Annie Hall.
Specifically because it's Annie Hall. Like, specifically because it's supposedly one of the greatest comedies ever made.
I would disagree, but...
You gave it a two, right?
I did.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did because I can't stand Woody Allen in it. Yeah. I cannot stand him in it. I hate him in... I don't like Woody Allen, the human being, and I like him even less in the characters that he plays in his films. Mm-hmm. They are some of the most annoying people I've ever seen on film. And for me to root for them makes no sense to me. I can't do it. But if you watch Annie Hall got a two because of Woody Allen's character. I can't connect with him. I want to slap him around. I want to physically harm him. Woody Allen, the actor and director, I want to physically harm him because he's a piece of shit. The character he plays in Annie Hall is somebody that I want to pummel. But when you watch Annie Hall, you can see why it's so highly regarded. Because it is so fucking inventive and does so many things that you see are copied later in life by other comedies and romantic comedies. Mm-hmm. And it is so incredibly inventive. I can't imagine what audiences must have thought when they watched this in Annie Hall 77, I think. Like, it must have been mind-blowing. You're like, fuck, this is so awesome. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Manhattan, 3 out of 5. The next film is a series I've been watching with my daughter. We watched the first one a couple weeks ago. We watched the next one the following week. And this last week, we finally finished off the trilogy. That movie is Jumanji, The Next Level. In Jumanji, The Next Level, the gang is back, but the game has changed. As they return to rescue one of their own, the players will have to brave parts unknown, from arid deserts to snowy mountains, to escape the world's most dangerous game. These movies are better than they should be. The first Jumanji was fun, with Robin Williams. I'd heard that Jumanji, whatever the first one was, the second one, Jumanji Welcome to the Jungle, was better than it should be. And I agree. This one was better than it should have been. But it's a little bloated. I will say this. I'm not a fan of Kevin Hart.
Me neither.
I like him in these.
Yeah.
I think I like him in these because he's not being Kevin Hart. He's actually having to act as the people who are supposed to be trapped in his character's body. Hmm. So he doesn't do a lot of his Kevin Hart shit that I can't stand. So I had a lot of fun with these movies. And I won't lie, they almost got me to cry a couple times. Wow. About the friendship and the camaraderie of everything. It really affected me. I had a really good time. My daughter had a really good time. She gave this a 4. Actually, Maya rates things out of 10, so she gave this an 8.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what my mom gave it. My mom joined us for this one.
Fun.
But she definitely laughed a lot. So this was fun. I think I prefer the previous one over this one. Yeah. But it was a 3. It's a 3 out of 5.
Yeah. Honestly, nothing about these leads me to believe I would like them. Or at least, I shouldn't say that. Nothing about these movies has intrigued me enough to actually put in the effort to go watch them. Mm. It strikes me as just a reboot that I would have no connection to. I have very little connection to the original.
Neither did I.
I did watch it as a kid, but it wasn't like a favorite or anything. I don't know. I like Jack Black. Like Jack Black a lot.
My daughter loves Jack Black.
Yeah, that's great. She's got good taste. I don't really like Dwayne Johnson. I don't really like Kevin Hart. And I don't have no connection to Jumanji, so pass.
This would be one of the few times I would say that Dwayne Johnson is actually acting. He is completely believable portraying the people that are stuck inside his character's body. So he doesn't act like Dwayne Johnson. And I found it almost endearing. I had a good time with these movies. All right, moving on to this round of the Manny Movie Club. It's Wes's turn. He picked the 1931 German film M. I didn't even know what this movie is about. When the police in a German city are unable to catch a child murderer, other criminals join in the manhunt.
Oh, shit. That's a heavy synopsis.
This movie is about a serial child killer. Because he's not a child.
Yes.
That's a serial killer. He is a serial killer who kills children.
Fuck.
And the movie's about the police are completely unable to catch him. So they're upping their efforts to try and catch him, which means more police presence, so the gangs can't do their crime. So they take it upon themselves to find this serial killer.
That's super cool.
Yes.
That's a very cool concept.
I didn't know anything about this. So the concept of this is very similar to a movie I love called The Gangster, the Cop, and the Devil.
Yes.
This movie was shockingly dark for 1931. I couldn't believe how dark this movie was. There is an opening scene. It's not a spoiler because it's how the movie opens. About a woman waiting for her daughter to come home from school. And you know what's about to happen. But as the time goes by and the mother starts to get worried because her daughter is not home at the time she usually is, and you know what has happened to this daughter, it's kind of harrowing. And this was really good. This was a really good movie. It's not a mystery. Like, you're not trying to figure out who the serial killer is. You meet him fairly early. Not early on, but you meet him in time, and you know that he is the serial killer. He's played by Peter Lorre, who, if you can remember, played Ugarte in Casablanca.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Yeah. So I have a special connection to him as an actor, and he's really good in this. He has a monologue at the end of the movie that is fucking riveting. This movie is really good. All the praise heaped on this film is worthy of it. I had a really great time. I am finalizing my rating now. I needed time because it was deciding between 4 or 5.
Mm-hmm.
It's a 4. I think it's not a 5 because I just don't see myself revisiting this movie fairly often for an entertainment package. Not because of the subject matter, but just because the opening scene is pretty good. The middle part is okay. Like, it's really fun to watch, but I think if I was to watch it again, this is where I would kind of find myself losing interest. And then kind of like the climax and the ending of the film are fucking next level. So I highly recommend watching this movie. This is the kind of movie, again, not because of the incredibly dark subject matter. I just don't see this as a movie where you're, and again, not because of subject matter, you're not going to be like, I really want to watch M. But this is a movie you'll watch once and be like, that was really fucking good. And then probably, I don't know, maybe a couple years down the line, you might want to revisit it again when you find out your buddy hasn't seen it, who's really into movies and is okay with like a 1931 German film.
You know what? I don't think I'm going to have... This is still the pick, right?
Yeah.
I don't think I am going to have time for it this time around, unfortunately. That is intriguing.
And it's free on YouTube, by the way.
My experience with pre-war German cinema has been... it's been only two movies, I think. It's been Nosferatu,
mm-hmm.
and it's been The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari. Mm-hmm. And I really enjoyed The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari.
I think you would fucking love this.
Yeah, it sounds like I would, honestly. And both those films I just listed, by the way, are silent films. I didn't realize that this is a talkie.
Yeah, total talkie.
Yeah, that's super interesting. This actually has my interest. I am going to... Wes, if you're listening to this, I'm sorry. I'm probably not going to get around to this time around. I think I am going to put it on my watch list.
I hope you do.
For down the line. What did you watch this on? Tubi?
It's on YouTube.
Oh, yeah. Fuck yeah.
For free.
Cool.
So it does say it is on Tubi for free, but you can watch it on YouTube commercial free.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah.
And what is it? 111 minutes? Okay. Oh, it already is on my watch list. I'm smart.
Yeah, 100%.
I'm glad you like this. I honestly wasn't really expecting, or I didn't know what to expect.
Dude, it's so good. It's so good. Yeah. All right. So, moving on to my 1997s, trying to get as much done as I can as we're closing in. We're only just a few weeks away from closing out 1997. So, I'm trying to get in some ones I haven't seen. And this one comes highly regarded on Letterboxd. It's the 1997 Japanese film Cure. A frustrated detective deals with the case of several gruesome murders committed by people who have no recollection of what they've done. This was on the Criterion channel, which I subscribe to. And I heard it was a horror film, so I was like, I'm going to have to be in the right mood to watch this. It is a horror in regards that it is about these very gruesome murders. You don't ever see any of the murders occurring. Oh, a couple you do, but nothing is like gross. Like it's not a horror in regards to blood and guts. There is a lot of blood, but it's not gratuitous. This is more very thriller. Think along the lines, not at the same level. Think more lines like Silence of the Lambs.
Sure.
What can I talk about without giving it away? This movie is all about a detective who is trying to figure out why these people are committing murders but don't remember doing it. And it's pretty fucking creepy. I did enjoy this movie. It has a pretty decent pace, but it got a little slow at times. Again, thankfully it was in Japanese.
It is Japanese, I think.
Yep.
Yeah.
Thankfully it was in Japanese, so I had to pay attention. But there's a few moments where I found myself kind of wandering a little bit. But yeah, this was pretty good. Pretty good. Not as good as my opinion is below what most people's are, but I had a pretty good time. I gave Cure 3 out of 5.
Just want to at least add, this was directed by Kiyoshi Kurosawa. Mm-hmm. No relation to Akira Kurosawa. Sorry, I keep saying Kurosawa. I think it's Kurosawa, but you get what I'm saying.
Yeah.
No relation to the famous director of Seven Samurai.
Yeah. Yeah. So, pretty good. Hmm. Worth checking out. This would be a very interesting North American remake.
Apparently, I'm just reading on the Wikipedia page, apparently Bong Joon-ho has said this is one of the greatest films of all time.
A lot of the reviews I read on Letterboxd have this, like, they're all, like, at the top, like, 4s, 5s, 4.5s, like, I can understand why people would like this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the last film I want to talk about was one that I was, unsure as how I would feel about it, as I hadn't watched it in a very long time. That is the comedy, Austin Powers, International Man of Mystery.
I'm actually worried to I'm worried for your review, and I'm worried to revisit it myself.
A world-class playboy and part-time secret agent from the 1960s emerges after 30 years in a cryogenic state to battle with his nemesis, Dr. Evil. When Austin Powers came on the screen on the scene in 1997, this movie did okay at the box office. Where it found new life was on home video. Everybody fucking loved it. Then they made the sequel, which fucking massacred at the box office. Mm-hmm. And then the third one I didn't like. I'd seen this a few times, and I didn't mind it, but I grew pretty old of the Austin Powers shtick. Because everybody was saying, yeah, baby, groovy baby, copying him. So I found myself very uninterested in Austin Powers. What I found myself loving, that I always did, was Dr. Evil. I don't think I laughed one time at anything that Austin Powers did, with the exception of the very childish joke at the beginning of the movie where he pees for a very long time.
I still think about that often when I go to the bathroom.
So do I. So do I. That is the only part in this movie that had Austin Powers in it that I found amusing. Dr. Evil had me laughing several times. The fact that Mike Myers was able to play both characters is a very telling idea of the skill of this man when he wants to use it properly. Sadly, he goes overboard in the following films when he brings in Fat Bastard and then he brings in Goldmember. Mm-hmm. They don't work for me. I'm not a fan. Those are other things that got quoted all the time when they came out, was the Fat Bastard. Like, get in my belly.
Yeah.
And was it gold?
Yeah.
No. But I did have a really good time with Dr. Evil and his son, Scott, played by Seth Green.
Yeah. The idea, like, it honestly didn't even really occur to me, because I don't think I watched these movies in succession when I was a kid. I kind of watched them whenever they were on TV.
Yeah.
As an adult now, it is so hilarious to me, the idea that Dr. Evil would just have a son named Scott, who's like an angsty sort of whatever teenager, played by Seth Green. That concept, for some reason, is really funny to me.
I did have a good time with this. I was worried that I was going to hate this, but I had a pretty good time. I gave it a 3 out of 5.
That's honestly better than I expected. I was not expecting a passing grade for this.
But, yeah.
Yeah. My experience with these movies is, I did watch them as a kid. Mm-hmm. They do have a nostalgia factor for me. They are not among my, like, you know, I don't hold them on the same level as other comedies I watched as a kid, like the Jim Carrey comedies that we've talked about a million times. But they are in that same genre, let's say, for me.
What's the second one? Austin Powers and what?
The Spy Who Shagged Me.
Spy Who Shagged Me. Okay.
Yeah.
So I've mentioned this a few times. There, off the top of my head, I can think of three times off the top of my head where I am, and I'm not exaggerating, literally fallen out of my chair at the theater from laughing so hard. In chronological order, I believe they would go number one, Ace Ventura fights the mascot in Ace Ventura, Pet Detective.
Okay.
I fell out of my fucking seat laughing.
Yeah, that's good.
Number two, the Comic-Con panel in Chasing Amy.
Mm-hmm.
So what's a Nubian?
Yeah.
And three, Dr. Evil and Scott on Jerry Springer.
Yeah, that's a great fucking moment.
Yeah. Those three, literally, I fell out of my chair laughing.
I can't believe they got Springer for that.
I know.
It's crazy.
I know. So the second one I've always really enjoyed, and I'm anticipating the rewatch. I don't think I'm going to enjoy it as much as I did when it came out or in its subsequent rewatches. But I do know that I'm probably going to enjoy this Jerry Springer thing. Mm. I am probably going to enjoy Mini-Me and Austin Powers fight again.
Yeah, that's a good scene. That's what I thought you were going to say, actually.
That was pretty good.
Yeah.
I didn't fall out of my seat, but I laughed pretty hard.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm looking forward to rewatching that one because, you know, I really did like it.
Other than you already touched on, you're not really a fan of Goldmember. I can take him or leave him myself. You know who's not good in Goldmember?
Beyonce.
Beyonce.
Yeah.
Not funny.
Shocker. Shocker. So yeah, that's what I've been watching. That wraps up of what we've been watching.
Yeah. Wow.
Please remember to rate, review, and subscribe to us on iTunes. If you give us a 5-star rating and a positive review, it does increase the profile of our podcast, allows more people to find us. You can also give us a rating on Spotify, which we would love. Also, answer our weekly question on Spotify, and if you do, I promise to read it on air. You can follow us on Instagram and Threads at sam_manny_movie. You can email us at sammannymoviepodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Facebook at the Samuel Manuel Movie Podcast, which I think I actually finally updated. Try to get back on that habit. I think there's other things. Oh, Letterboxd, right. Manny42 and Sam Reimer, respectively. For real talk.
Nice one.
I'm Manny Manuel.
Shazam. I'm Sam Reimer.
Adios.